Let's do this. Let's light this candle.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 73, recorded live on Wednesday, July 31st, 2013. I am Joel Duggan, and to my right, as always, is Mr. Peyton Francis of CardboardTreehouse.com. Peyton, what's going on, man?
Hello, ladies. Everything's very well here.
Ladies, there's one lady. Molly's in the chat room.
Hey, Molly.
I don't know if she wants you to talk to her like that, though. It's like Mr. Potato Head. I'm a married spot. if you're new to the Citadel Cafe, this is where myself, Peyton, and sometimes a guest come to hang out and talk about the geeky stuff we are into. We are not limited to, but tend to go beyond books, websites, television, movies, all that kind of stuff. If it's geeky and fun, we will let you know. If we think it's utter crap, we will also just shit all over it and tell you not to go see it. So yeah, I don't know what's new with you. What have you been doing the last few days?
I've been playing with a new toy.
I like toys.
Yeah, one of the local animators here in the city had purchased one of those Unovos. Cintiq alternatives.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And he got the 19-inch version, the MSP 19U, and anyway he did a lot of flash animation, but more of the puppetry style of it. So he was fine. He wasn't really getting as much use out of it that he would like. So he opted to put it up on Kijiji. So he's been gracious enough to let me take it for a test run for a day or so to see how I like it. And I got off from yesterday morning, and I got home and I uninstalled my Wacom drivers and I installed the drivers for this, and I was all ready to go. And I went to put the plug in, and the cord from the power bar to the wall was missing. Like, when he took it from his house, he left it at his place.
Oh, no.
I'm like, oh, no. So I ended up getting a hold of him. And anyway, so he brought that in this morning. So I've been playing with it for most of the day now. So some of my to-do list things have been falling to the wayside. But I've gotten some good experimenting done with it. And he doesn't have all the bells and whistles of a Cintiq, but it's a fraction of the cost. And the resolution is, what is the resolution on this thing? Because it's not full HD. It's only, I think it's 14 something. It's, where is it?
It's
1440 by 900.
So 900, okay.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit more resolution than, say, like a MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Okay.
Now, they are coming out with a 22-inch version that is going to be full HD sometime this summer, right? So that'll be interesting to see how that goes. But, you know, I do all my work in vector, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, like the full HD thing is not that big a deal for me, I don't think. You know,
I was about to say, I mean, if you're the full HD thing, all that really does is if you were, say, working on something that was going to be presented on a Blu-ray, then you would get to see 100% what that would look like.
Yeah.
I can, if I want, on the Cintiq that I have, which is 24 inches, it is 1920 by 1200, so 1080 is full HD, and this has just a little bit more. The idea being that extra is your panels and your, you know, your menu bars and your dock for your Mac and stuff like that. So the actual, you know, viewing resolution at 100% can be 1920 by 1080. Which is good if you're doing, you know, concept painting or something like that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, sorry. And they're, I was just looking at the specs between that and the 22, like what they're coming out with. And there's only like some very minor differences other than the extra 3 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have some hotkeys on there. So like eight programmable hotkeys.
Right.
Which, you know, but they're going to be set up at the top of it. I don't really use hotkeys on the side of a Wacom anyway. I always use just my regular keypad. So.
Right. Now, is your current Unova that you're testing, is it 19-inch diagonal like a monitor, or is it square like the old 21 Cintiqs?
It is 19 diagonal.
No, I know, but it is.
Oh,
it,
sorry,
it,
no,
it,
it's 16:10 is the aspect.
Okay, nice. Yeah, so it's aspect. It's 16:10. That's cool. Because one of the things that I really like, because people ask about the Cintiq all the time, 24. It's huge. It's a really really big piece of kit, and. It's taken me at least a year to get used to just dealing with the size of it. But the thing that I like about it is that because it's large and it's a rectangle, you can work still in a rectangle, but you kind of work in like an 8x10 sort of ratio. And then okay. You have this extra 3 or 4 inches of panels under your right or your left hand, depending on which hand you use to draw. Yeah. And it just really gives you a lot of room. Like you never really feel like your panels are like encroaching on your drawing.
Yeah.
And I can see on the 19, especially because it has that aspect ratio, you can still have all of your panels, you know, like your layers and whatever it is that you need. Well, maybe not for you for Flash because you've got a timeline for that. But in Photoshop, for example, all your layers could be on the right-hand side and your brushes could be on the right-hand side. And you'd still have a decent chunk of screen to work on, you know, the size of a piece of paper.
Yeah. And one of the things I found actually is like with the Cintiq, I think there's a hotkey where you can take your Cintiq and have that be drawn right on it. And if you had a dual monitor setup, you could hop to the other screen and have your mouse on there, right?
Absolutely, yep.
There's no hotkey on this to do that. And there's no, I haven't found a way of doing it other than what I've done is I have my two monitors set up, orientated within like the settings menu on my Mac side by side.
Okay.
And then there's a pen tablet setting window that within it you can actually go monitor one or monitor two for where the mouse is.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've done is I've taken that and I've slid the menu halfway across both screens so I can see it on both screens, just one little window. So I need to go to the left-hand side on the Lenovo, and then I can bring up the menu and switch over to monitor two, or on the right-hand side on my main monitor, and I go to monitor one, so I can actually still use this as a Wacom tablet as well as a Cintiq type of device. So I can put my timeline on the other thing or other pro, you know. So it actually gives me like double real estate, which is kind of nice.
Oh, that's cool too. Yeah.
But again, it's not like a like a click. So I've got to go like Alt Tab to get into that setting program.
Yeah.
So it's one extra step.
One extra step.
But at the same time, you know, I do a lot of storyboards and stuff, and this is going to speed that along nicely. I can really see that. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can tell you right now, I don't use the hotkey button to use the Cintiq 24 as a tablet because the secondary monitor I have is my MacBook Pro, which is 13 inches. It's usually off to the side and out of the way. And I only ever really put reference up on it, and that's it. So I don't really need to get down there for anything. It's disorienting to use the hotkey and then use this giant tablet that's right in front of you after that you've been drawing right on to then use it like a tablet again. So what I've done, because I'm a Mac user, I have the wireless touchpad, which I originally bought for the living room when I have the Mac hooked up to the TV. Yeah. You just sit on the couch and you can use this little wireless trackpad. It's about 4 by 4 inches or so. And so I sit that next to the Cintiq just off to the side about where you rest your pen. Yeah. So if I have to go to the other monitor, I can just use my finger and just...
And that pad's only...
That pad goes to both monitors.
Okay.
But you can swipe that across. I have the Cintiq, of course, set to only monitor two. So the Cintiq, I mean, I go to the edges of the Cintiq and that just goes to the edge, just like a piece of paper. So it's good that way. I hope you're able to find a solution for a tablet use for you. Cause it's so much faster to work with a tablet, you know, and be able to draw right on the screen. How's the parallax effect on the Lenovo?
Oh, actually it's great. It's,
Lenovo, sorry.
Yeah. It's not really. You get used to it pretty quickly here, and it tracks very quickly. There's no real lag behind it, which is nice. Pressure sensitivity is great. It's the screen itself is glass.
Okay.
It's edge to edge, so it's a little sticky.
Mm.
Some people say it's slick and stuff, but if your hand, like I'm a hot mess, so my hand sticks to it. So I need to get one of those. I need one of those gloves. For now, I just went up to Walmart and picked up a couple of, like those cotton work gloves and cut the thumb and. Mm-hmm. Thumb and two fingers out of it, and that's working fine right now. So I'm enjoying it, and sort of thinking like get this or get the 22 when it comes out and give that a try. But
right.
All the reviews of this is a pretty sturdy device.
Yeah, my friend Krishna did a really solid review, and so has do you remember Noah Bradley, the guy that we mentioned last week?
Yeah.
He's done a review as well. So if you Google Noah Bradley and Unova, or Krishna Sadasivam and Unova, their blog posts about reviewing the hardware will come up.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, and it's light as a feather. It's like super light, and the adjustment on it and stuff is super easy. You just reach behind, you pull up a little toggle, and it just drops up and down.
So you could easily put that on a monitor arm if you wanted.
I can put it on a monitor arm. I can put it on my lap, no problem.
Jeez, man.
Right?
And those monitor arms are only like $130.
Yeah, right. So it's
wow. Unfortunately, my Cintiq is 32 pounds without the stand.
Yeah. So this thing here, I'm trying to see if there's a second hand now. The thing for the weight here, but you don't. Oh yeah, weight is gross weight is 5.4 pounds, 5.4 kilograms, which is about 12 pounds.
That's about 12 pounds. Yeah. Wow. Jeez, that's light.
Yeah, super light.
Yeah. So. Well, it's probably along. It's probably on par with the 21-inch Cintiqs, that the plastic
probably,
ones.
Probably. Yeah. 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 Well, it's got a very similar setup on the back with the.
Oh, I see. Yeah, like stuff, the pop-out stands.
Right. It only has one VGA in.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's got a USB as well, but it's just a VGA, so you got to get an adapter for your machine. Mm. You don't have
that's
that.
That's not a big deal.
But that's also hardwired in on an angle, so if it breaks, you're pretty much boned, I think, right?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
But from all indications, the customer service and these guys are great. All the machines are tested before they send them out.
Do you mind if I ask what the price point is on it?
Price point? I mean, in the States, they're $599 new plus $25 for shipping and then taxes, I guess.
Okay.
In Canada, I seen one in Canada on Amazon.ca, and that was at $699 plus taxes.
So you're looking at the better part of $800.
Yeah. So right. Now, though this one being Kijiji, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't want to ask. What he's selling it for. But yeah. So the value of it though, compared to a Cintiq, which new is, by the time I got mine, it was probably $3,400.
Yeah. Well, even the new 13-inch you just came out with.
That's $1,000, I think.
$1,000, right? Yeah. And this has all the same sort of specs and stuff. Like, see, the only little thing is, you know, the missing button. The interface is a bit, you know, it's a little bit older and stuff. But it works on Macs and PCs and everything else. And, you know, if you had one of those little Mac Minis and this thing, it's a mobile office.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The one thing that I'm always curious about, and I think it's probably just a cost factor. The thing that I would like to see, especially after seeing my mother's new iPad up close, I would really like to see tablets get the dots per inch higher.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think we are going to need much more than, the capability of doing like a 16 by 10 or 24 inches. Like, I don't think we need anything bigger that way. I'd like to see them get lighter. But, I mean, the biggest thing for me is when you're that close to it, my Cintiq, it's 72 dpi. So you really can see the pixels. You do feel that you're painting with pixels. You can lean back. You don't have to get right up close to it. That's one of the things that I like about it, is that it's less strain on my back, because when I draw and I have to do like the cross hatching on a coffee cup or something like that, where the lines I'm making are 3 millimeters long, like I have to kind of get in close to do that.
Yeah.
But on the Cintiq, which is also the danger for someone like me, you can zoom in, and then you can make those strokes that are 6 inches long on the Cintiq, and they're just these tiny little details. Now you can get carried away,
and you can
start noodling stuff, which I try not to do. And it's a challenge when I'm painting, because as I'm learning to paint, I'm finding like I'm blending everything and everything looks good, but I'm spending so much time on this stuff. It's like, man, I really didn't have to do it that precisely. Like, I mean, when I zoom out to 100%, it's like, you'd never know.
Yeah.
You'd never know that I changed like 16 pixels in that last brush stroke. I would know. Yes. It would bother me and drive me crazy and probably drive Jocelyn crazy. So it's all good that we decide to step away when we can from that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But actually, one last thing on this is the thing on it is sort of the viewing angle.
The thing on it? Can we narrow that down?
You know, the viewing angle is like, they say it's 85 degrees horizontal up and down and 80 degrees left and right.
Hmm.
And so you pretty much got to be like over the center of it.
I see.
You
know? Okay.
So like with your Cintiq, your viewing angle is a bit wider, but with this, you're pretty much on top of it. But because it's so light and maneuverable, you can do what you need to.
How's the color balance?
Pardon?
How's the color balance?
It's I think it's a little on the cool side, but for me, again, it's fine, right?
Hmm.
And with this as well. So I've got this up right in front of my Mac, and I've got it on probably about a 50-degree up angle. And right. So I'm looking at, like, my head's turned looking at it, but I can see my Mac behind it, and I'm only missing probably about an inch from the screen, so I'm just going to jack my Mac up on a couple books, and I'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Anyway. But yeah, right, overall, I'm happy with it so far, and I think I'll probably pull the trigger on it, so it's just a matter of convincing the wife. But I've got that 9x12-inch Intuos 3 here, so I could sell that if I need to.
Right.
You know, just try and cover some of the costs.
Well, that's not the one that you use all the time, though.
Yeah, that's the one I use all the time.
Okay, because I would say, like, don't get rid of the backup. The biggest problem and the biggest mistake that I ever made was only ever having one working tablet.
Okay.
I ran into some issues when my working tablet in the middle of a contract decided to stop working.
Ah. And then you're trying with a brush pad, with a touch pad.
Yeah, or a mouse, which I don't recommend after using a stylus for years. So that's definitely something to keep in mind. Although, I mean, nowadays you can get a bamboo tablet for $100 if, like, you really wanted a backup that was just kind of what you wanted to do. For me, I actually have some upcoming event plans to announce. I am going to be at DCAF, which is the Dartmouth Comic Arts Festival. That is on August 18th, in about 4 weeks' time, 4 weeks from last Sunday, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Alderney Landing Waterfront Facility in Dartmouth, here in Halifax, Nova Scotia. And I'm excited because this is something that Cal Johnson from Strange Adventures puts on. This is the second year now, I think, that he's done it.
Third year, I think.
First year wasn't DCAF. I think the first year was Books on the or Word on the Street. It was the Book Festival. Yeah, he was part of it still.
Yeah.
No, the next year he broke off and did his own thing. And it's turned out to be a much nicer event. He does a fantastic job planning it. He has lots of help from, obviously, the staff at Strange Adventures, who are all fantastic. There's going to be a huge list of people there. Most of which are local artists, of course. And it's really accessible because it's free. He invites the local artists to be there. He invites the community to be there. And it's just come meet and hang out with the artists and buy their stuff if you want. It's a really cool event. Which is why I'm doing everything I can to promote it, because he was kind enough to extend an invitation to me. I put up a post on my website, joelduggan.com, in the blog, which you can find pretty easily because it's the first post right now. And I'm also doing a sale because at these conventions, I tend to get asked to do sketches and sometimes, like, sketch cards, but mostly it's like 9x12 kind of con sketches. And also I often get asked to do artist editions of my book. And all of that kind of stuff takes time. And at an event like HalCon, which is a larger convention here in Halifax later in the year, I've got a few days. So if someone orders something and they want to come and pick it up the next day, I can go home and draw it that night. I can finish off stuff that I, you know, artist editions that didn't get finished or whatever. This is just a one-day, one-afternoon event, as a matter of fact. So I put up this pre-order sale, so anybody that is going to be at DCAF and would like to pick up some original artwork from me or some a copy of my book or an artist edition, then you can just pick those up as specific items in my store. They're called the pre-order convention sketch or the Volume 1 DCAF special. And you can see all the options there. And what that does is save you the tax and saves you the shipping, because, of course, you just walk away with it. Works out for everybody, especially with the original artwork, because though I package everything very carefully, if you are buying an original piece from me and you pick it up at DCAF, then your artwork is then under your control on transit. You don't have to worry about Canada Post mucking it up by accident. So that's it. That sale is going to be on from July 29th. Which was Monday, to August 12th, which is 2 weeks from that Monday. So there is now 12 days left, because I need the rest of that week to complete whatever orders come in so that I can make sure that they're all ready to go and ready to hand over to people on the Sunday for DCAF. And incidentally, if you happen to be wandering around DCAF and find yourself without cash, a lot of the vendors are going to have Interac. I myself have got Square. It's an app for the iPad. So I'll be able to take visas and PayPal, and I can't remember, there's something else too. It might be MasterCard or American Express. I can't remember who Square is partners with. And then I'll have that information available on my site too. But Cal usually has an Interact thing going on. So if any of the vendors are stuck, not to mention, I think there's a couple of banks just across the street from the venue. So yeah, it's going to be a fun time. I'm looking forward to it. I had fun last year, and it's going to be fun to meet people. And I know it sounds like a big plug, but I really just like meeting people. Like, even if you're just there to say hello to your favorite artists and shake their hands or give them a high five, like, that's awesome. You know, it's so much fun to meet people that read the strip or have purchased the book previously and wanted to come up and talk about it, especially because it can get, not slow, but it can be a very accessible event. So if there's any artists out there that want to come and find out what some pro or hobby comicers are doing, I mean, yeah. Parents with kids, like, it's very kid friendly. Bring the whole family. I mean, there's lots of artists that are willing to share their knowledge and stuff like that. I remember Mike Holmes last year gave a talk about getting into comics to a crowd that ranged from like 10-year-olds to, you know, 50-year-olds. It was really cool.
And basically, it was like, just do it.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah. Draw more stuff. Draw all the time from start to finish. Yeah. Right on. Well, we can jump into movies, TV, and video. And boy, do I have a gigantic movie to talk about. We touched about it on it last week with your, encouragement for me to go see it. But we're going to get into some spoilers this week for Pacific Rim. If you have not seen it, this would be a good time to cover your ears and run around screaming, because we're going to spoil the crap out of it. Not that it's that deep of a movie to spoil, but there are some very key moments that were fun to experience without having seen too much of it ahead of time. So, spoiler warning complete. I saw Pacific Rim yesterday with Jocelyn, and I have to say, how cool is my girlfriend? She dragged me to see it. I wanted to go see it. I thought it would be fun, but she was so excited she could barely contain herself.
I don't know if that speaks to her coolness or your lameness.
I don't know. I mean, I was expecting it to be good. You know, like, I heard enough about it, and I wasn't kicking and screaming, but I was like, yeah, sure, let's go. But I was surprised. I mean, Jocelyn likes geeky stuff. You know, like, she likes Firefly. She likes Buffy the Vampire Slayer. She likes all that stuff. She's into video games. But Pacific Rim was just not one of those things that I would think she would be really up on, because she's very critical of story and characters. Mm-hmm. And we went, like, she didn't like parts of Man of Steel. She didn't like Star Trek at all. Like, hated the latest Star Trek. Did not have a good time in that show. Mm-hmm. But she loved Pacific Rim. And so did I. It was a hoot, man. It was such a good film. Like, if anybody out there that hasn't seen it, well, you're probably not listening anymore. Go. Absolutely go. You have to go see this movie. See it again. You saw it in IMAX, right?
Yeah, I saw it in IMAX in 3D.
That must have been insane.
It was great. I saw the trailer of the Superman movie, and I had to, at one point when they're going under the water, I was like, I actually like sort of held my breath and gasped. I was like, that looks really cool. And I was like, oh, they got me.
Yeah.
Like, that was it right there in the trailer.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing that I liked so much about Pacific Rim, despite the fact that it's not predictable, but it is not so far away from other apocalyptic movies that you've seen, like Armageddon or, you know, Deep Impact and stuff like that. You do kind of know, you know, the gist of the story. I mean, it's a good summer feel-good movie, but it still had me on the edge of my seat. Like, there were still some points where I could feel myself, like, being pulled forward in my chair, or just, you know, wondering, what's this guy going to say? Like, what's going to happen next? What the hell is the next monster going to look like? It's a Category 5. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Jocelyn, it's a Category 5. I know. Like, just, you know, it was crazy. And we had a lot of fun, because it was like, we were one of three people in the theater on a Tuesday afternoon at 3 o'clock.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, the theater was basically packed when I was there.
Oh, well, it was Penhorn. Or not Penhorn. Okay. It was Park Lane.
Oh,
and it wasn't this tiny theater, but we sat close enough that the screen was still quite big. But I really enjoyed it. What would you say would be your kind of like pros and cons?
Well, pros were just the design work was great.
Yeah.
Monster, I really enjoy the fact that, again, I always like Del Toro's work. The way he mixes the real and the CG, I think, is pretty good. If he can build it on set, he will. So when those guys are driving the Jaegers, you know, and they're being thrown around, they're actually on this giant gimbal being like beat
around. Yeah. No, it did feel real. Like, even the scale of it, like, there's a point now with special effects, and Jocelyn mentioned this too, that you really have to just, like, you're no longer going, oh, wow, that's a really cool special effect. You get lost. You forget that you're watching a movie where these, I can't remember how tall they were supposed to be, 500 feet tall. You know, like, they actually, you just feel like they exist. They move at the right speed. They have the right weight.
Yeah.
You know? They look like they work.
Yeah, the wind-ups and all that stuff is really cool, and the there's a lot of really cool elements in their designs and everything, and I was just happy with it overall. And the Kurgan was in it, so.
The who?
The
wrestler.
The Russian.
Yes.
The Russian driver. He's in New Brunswick.
Yes, I knew that. I did know that. Yeah, I met him at HellCon a couple years ago.
Yeah, whenever I see, like, he was actually at King's one time when we were there, and he was on a panel for something, and whenever I see him, I always, like, you know, like, oh, it's that guy. You know, I got this warm place in my heart for him, right? I'm like, he's awesome, right?
Just, yeah,
he's in all these Hollywood movies. Which is really quite funny.
Big man.
Yeah, super nice guy and all that stuff.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, but you know, I thought it was a great little film, and not really little, I guess. But,
it's little in that it's fun, and that it's not meant to be. Well, I mean, it might end up being a franchise because it's doing so well, but I kind of don't want it to be. Like, I don't want them to make Pacific Rim 2. You know, like, I just want them to leave it.
Well,
just...
yeah, there have been some talk of that. Like, I think Del Toro actually in an interview one time said, if we do a second one, he's talking about, like, a human-Jaeger hybrid.
Oh, okay.
Right? Which, you know, was sort of alluded to a little bit there. But one of the things I like is Ron Perlman, because, you know, he's been in a bunch of Del Toro films. And I was thinking, oh, Ron's going to be in the next one if they do it again. Nope. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay.
Did you stay through the credits?
Yes. What happened at the end of the credits? No, Perlman, I didn't stay through the credits.
Perlman cuts himself out of the belly with the switchblade.
Oh,
and then he's like, where's my shoe?
The guys I was with, they were like, you know, we gotta get there. I'm like, oh, okay.
I
should have stuck around for that.
Yeah. Then. I mean, that brings me to some of the things that I did have a bit of a problem with. I mean, the monsters in the movie were genetically engineered weapons from an alien race that was trying to colonize our planet by terraforming it first and basically exterminating us and then making way for...
And this was their second attempt themselves. Because they did it back when we had with the dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs, which was a really cool nod to, like, no wonder these things look like dinosaurs. It's like, these are just the upscaled version.
Yeah.
And it was very, very... it was a neat concept. But then you have one of these cloned things that's pregnant. And they never really bother to explain how or why. I mean, we all know the birds and the bees version, but, like, well, why is a cloned weapon pregnant? Like, it didn't make sense. I mean, you could probably argue, you know, stick your finger on your glasses and say, well, actually, by having a pregnant clone sent through the portal, that means they only have to send one, and then it kind of reproduces and puts another one there. And sure, but they didn't really deal with it very well.
It also sets up sort of beg the question that, are they asexual?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean,
a la Godzilla 19... You know,
whatever that with Matthew Broderick, yeah. Like that kind of stuff. Like, I just, it's those kind of things that it didn't serve the movie. Outside of making some funny moments with Ron Perlman, there really wasn't much there, and it felt tacked on. So that was one of my big cons.
And again, if they didn't, you know, and it also, I think that scene probably serviced for people like me just to say, okay, Perlman's not going to be in the next one.
Yeah,
and you know. If I was really a nerd, I would have stuck around to find out.
Yeah, geez, minus 17 geek cred for you. The other, you know, small plot holes, which are totally forgivable, because they make for a better movie, is, like, there's all this chatter back and forth at the end on the radio when he goes through this rift, and he's going through a wormhole, and then he comes out the other side, and they're still yelling at him, like, are you there? You have to manually eject, blah, 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 and it's coming over the goddamn radio.
Yeah, between that and the... when they do eject, they happen to float up.
Yeah,
and he's falling through. Is it liquid or is it air? Float up.
It floated up. I don't know.
But you know, it's you know, we nitpick on that. But you know, they're you know, 500-foot tall robots fighting giant monsters. I mean, you know.
There's a grain of salt with all that kind of stuff. And I mean, I did feel like the ending was confusing. It's like, okay, I understand what they're doing. I don't understand why it worked. Like that kind of stuff was a little bit off. There's actually something right at the very beginning that I found really strange too. I mean, I understand that these things are huge and that in most, you know, continental shelf situations, they're going to be able to actually touch the ocean floor and just walk.
The Grand Banks of Newfoundland would be 200 feet, right?
Yeah. So the problem is when they come to attack, or not attack, but protect this fishing boat at the very beginning, the Jaeger comes out of nowhere. Yeah. And I'm just like, well, where was it? Was it under the water? Was he in like a tuck position? Because like, are they
do they swim horizontally? They were just at the edge of the shelf.
I have no idea what the issue there was. But again, like it just kind of pops out of the water and you're just like, what the hell is he standing on? This doesn't make any sense at all. So, I mean, which you quickly forget once he starts fighting this giant thing. I don't know. There's things like that just kind of, they catch me off guard. Things like, I can't remember the character's name because I just saw it yesterday, but there's the main guy and his pilot partner, the Japanese woman in the show.
Yeah.
And, she's added some stuff to the Jaeger that he used to drive 5 years ago. One of the things is a sword. And they're basically like, oh no, we gotta get out of here. Like, we're shit out of luck. We've got nothing left. And she's like, yes, we do. We have a sword. Activate sword. And it was like a Voltron episode, you know?
The thing is, if he's really inside of her mind with the drift, he wouldn't actually need to... Need to say that. Right?
Yeah,
that's why they didn't say up to that point.
Yeah, well, the other thing is, like, why didn't she brief him about the sword before they left to their potential death fighting these monsters? You know, hey, by the way, if we get in any shit, there's a sword that I added. You know, like, just so you know. Stuff like that was a little bit on the weak side. But, I mean, really tiny things. Because overall, it was an absolute blast. I really enjoyed all of the action, both, like, the fist fighting and the training and stuff like that. The martial arts that they were showing off. Cool stuff that happens with the robots. Like, I mean, they put a rocket in the elbow of the robot so it would punch harder. Like, how awesome is that? Like, activate elbow rocket. Hell yes. Bang. You know, like, just stuff like that was just really, really fun. I mean, it's a 10-year-old wet dream.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, the, I was trying to think there was one other thing that I thought was really cool. Speaking of, I mean, the acting from everybody was pretty good, as far as I'm concerned. I really like the gentleman that plays the leader, the marshal.
Yeah.
He's from Thor.
What is his name? He's in the E.
I don't remember his name right now. Yeah, it's horrible that I can't remember all these names. But he was the gate guy in Thor. What was he called? He's the guy with the sword that managed the Rainbow Bridge.
Yeah.
He's got a real presence. He's got, no matter what movie or what thing I've seen him in, he's always got this weight when he's there. And I really enjoy him. And the other thing that they did very, very well, which they should have done in Man of Steel, is at the very end, you know, they save the day. They both survive. There's these emotional moments where they've been so connected and they're obviously got a thing for each other the whole movie. Yeah. And they never show them kissing. They show that they care for one another. They touch foreheads, I think, because they're so relieved, but they never kiss because it's just not the right time. Like, you've got helicopters flying everywhere. You know, it stays that far away from Hollywood, you know, and says, nope, you guys are just going to have to imagine what happens when these guys get back to their bunks. That's it. You don't need to see it. You know, like, it just, brilliant. I really appreciated that. I think that's what they should have done with Superman. There should have been like a longing look, a near kiss, something that just should have just left everybody wanting more with Man of Steel. Yeah. And instead of this big on, let's make out as Metropolis falls around us and hundreds of thousands of people die. Like, it just that didn't make any sense to me. So I really enjoyed that about this movie, that they handled the love story, I guess, very, very well.
So. Yeah, you ever see Soldier with Kurt Russell?
No.
Basically, the nature versus nurture sort of thing. You know, the army selects all these orphans and then basically create up like this death match thing where only the strongest survive, and then they become these soldiers. And then when they're, you know, these guys are in their 40s or whatever, the army's about to retire and replace them with these ones that have been genetically modified.
Mm-hmm.
So they end up on this distant planet and all that stuff. Anyway, there's a love interest aspect to it, but because, you know, he's been raised from birth not to feel love, you know, there's no acting upon it. So it's, you know, they have a little bit of a love story in it, in just, you know, like glances and you can tell. But, you know, he wouldn't know how to do that properly. Like, not necessarily the physical part, but, you know, just, you know, express love. So it's just neat how, you know, that's a good example of them actually, you know, showing the restraint and not actually bogging it down with this Hollywood love story sort of thing, right? Anyway.
Cool.
It could be good. We're checking it if you're interested.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway.
So what else has been on your plate?
On my plate? Let's see. What else has been on my plate? Not a whole lot, man. I am just working around the house here. You know, waiting to hear back on the other things. And saw a new trailer there. You know, with all the Comic-Con stuff that was going on, some of the stuff they're releasing is coming out now, and they have a new trailer for the new X-Men movie. It's not really a trailer. It's more of a thing about another one of those like fake movie websites, Trask, people who build the Sentinels and stuff. So we actually know there's going to be Sentinels in the upcoming X-Men film, which is going to be
Remind me, Sentinels are...
Sentinels are about, 18 feet tall, 5,000 pounds of mutant-killing robot.
Right, so they're like the size of a Transformer sort of thing.
Yeah, they came around in the 70s, and they were engineered to detect the mutant gene and then eradicate it. So, you know, they'll find some kid on the side of the street who has a mutant gene, and they just blast them with, like, rays and stuff.
Oh, wow.
And kill them, so... So this is like 50 years, and this is well in the future. And I guess the premise of the film is, like, it's Days of Future Past, so, like, the Sentinels are around, and the mutant population is pretty much destroyed, as well as, like, a good part of humanity and all that, because the Sentinels rise up, because, you know,
mm-hmm.
if you're going to create these, you know, super smart robots, they're going to figure out you don't have to work for people. Anyway, I'm not quite exactly sure how they're going to handle it in the film, but it's like the Monsters U website, you know? It's just Hollywood making websites better than most companies, you know?
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, it's an interesting little thing to check out. If you go into the thing, they've got, like, you know, innovation where you see, you know, what the company does, talking about their founder and all that. And there's one spot there where they actually show Peter Dinklage, their founder. And he's there, like, all in 70s garb with the handlebar mustache working on, you know, building the robots and all that stuff. So
right.
It's just a fun little thing to nerd out on if you got time.
This is really cool. I just watched, I had the volume down. So, cause I'm sure, I mean, there was like a promotional, like, we're a company that believes in your future. Like all this promo stuff. It's very similar to the, TED Talk video that they released just before, what was it called? Prometheus? Yes. Yeah. There was a TED Talk for the guy that was the industry leader that was funding the mission. And he was doing this talk, and it was fake. I mean, like, it was just given to...
It was TED Talk, like 20-something, right?
2022 or something like that, yeah. This is very, very cool. I like it when websites and stuff do this.
Yeah, there's another really good one, Omnicorp.com, which is also the same idea but for the upcoming RoboCop film.
Oh.
And so they're showing the different versions of the EM, the, you know, 208 and the XT 908 or whatever, the Aerial Vigilant. It's just really neat that they're showing, like, you know, actual products that they would have.
Yeah. You know. I mean, on one hand, I'm always excited for stuff like that, because, I mean, I like X-Men. I want to go see Wolverine. I like RoboCop, but I kind of wish, like, just take all that money and put it into something new.
You know, I think Elysium should be good, so that's new.
Yes, and there was another trailer before. It wasn't a trailer; it was one of the trivia questions before the movie yesterday, and it had Ryan Reynolds and what's his face there, Jeff Bridges.
Oh yeah, the R.I.P.D.
R.I.P.D. or something like that.
Yeah,
I mean that looked kind of cool. Actually,
Men in Black with dead people.
Yeah, there's there's an even cooler trailer. My friend Scott's reading the book right now. I think it's called The Seventh Son. That has Jeff Bridges in it. I don't really know if he's just getting old and he sounds a little bit funny, or whether he's putting on a specific kind of delivery and dialogue for some of the characters.
I think it might be his delivery dialogue, because it was a really funny clip the last week with what is her name? Jennifer Lawrence?
Yep.
Yeah, she was at some event and, like, you know, Jeff Bridges walked by, and she totally, like, she's a huge Lebowski fan, I guess, and she just nerded right out. She's like, oh my God, I can't believe you're here. He's like, hey, how you doing? And he was totally like the dude.
Oh, yeah. I know he's really chill. Like, I know he's really laid back. Because I've seen his speeches. Like, I've seen his acceptance speeches and stuff on stage. But when he was doing this character, which is like a... It's like an ancient mage battling evil. It's a very high fantasy movie. Lots of really cool monsters and things. But he's talking like the guy from Tron. You know, like he's just got this really slow, really... It sounds like he's got his mouth full. And I don't know why he's doing that. It's hard to kind of piece it together. But if you
go to his website, jeffbridges.com, he's got like, you know... drawings and music, photography, and all kinds of stuff on his website.
Oh yeah, no, I'm sure he's.
Yeah,
I'm
he does sure all kinds of just like really out there stuff. Sometimes
I'm sure he's all over the place. Yeah.
Anyway.
Cool. That reminds me. It's not in the notes, but I wanted to mention something, and that is, I saw the first full trailer for Jobs this morning.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. A lot of the circles that I travel in terms of tech podcasts are pretty critical of the movie coming out because they're all journalists. But I think they're critical in the same way that they're critical of The Social Network. The Social Network did not pretend to be Facebook. It was close, but they were just kind of taking the story and running with it and making a good movie out of it.
Yeah.
Jobs is a biofilm. Like, they're not changing the people or anything like that. They're pretty much flat out making a Steve Jobs biography in terms of what he did at Apple.
Yeah,
and I'm not 100% convinced that Ashton Kutcher is the right guy for the job, but I'm actually pretty interested in seeing the movie. The trailer was good. It's a little markety, but I mean, like, Apple's a little markety. kind of makes sense, right? I'm not really worried about thinking like I'm going to go see Kelso pretend to be Steve Jobs for 2 hours. You know?
Yeah.
I'm excited about it, so I think that's got to be something to watch. Because, I mean, so much of what we talk about on the show is, like, superheroes or action movies or sci-fi stuff. Like, I find that it's rare that I see something that's still tech-related, I guess, and still geeky, but still a drama. You know, it's kind of like a Forrest Gump, but for tech industry stuff. So, anyway, I'm quite curious to see, especially because we're probably going to get... Maybe some things might be twisted for a better movie, but you're going to get a general history. And I haven't read the biography, so I don't know how much, you know, I don't know much about the history way back when it was like the 70s and, you know, they were battling Microsoft and people were suing each other and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. Like, I don't know how that all went down. So
you remember 70, you were there.
Yeah, right. I entered the world in 79, my friend.
No.
Yes.
69.
No, not at all. No. I am not kicking and screaming. I am not. Well, for me, speaking of podcasts, actually, one of the things that I've been listening to is a new podcast about WildStar. Go figure. You knew you couldn't get through a whole episode without me mentioning WildStar.
What is this WildStar of which you speak? I have not heard of it yet.
You had not heard of it yet? Well, this is a podcast by Mog Nation, which is, I guess, a family of podcasts. I think they started off with SWTOR, the Star Wars MMO. But Wildcast is the name of their WildStar podcast. And I recently listened to episode 9. I almost finished it, but it was still really good and worth mentioning because they were focusing on lore. I mentioned last week on Citadel Cafe that the two new races were announced and some lore behind those races were then, I guess, given out into the world. The hosts of the show, and forgive me, guys, I don't remember all their names because there's like between 4 and 6 or 8 hosts at any given time and they rotate. So I don't know who's who and I don't know who is speaking when, but they're all really knowledgeable. They play a lot of games. I can't remember her name, but there's a girl on the show and she had a couple of really cool points about how lore affects her role-playing in the game. She doesn't, like, role-play in-game. She doesn't talk funny or, you know, make her character say things that are in character. But she likes to role-play for herself. She likes to have a backstory for her character that she's playing. She likes to kind of figure out what that is so that she can just kind of feel a little bit more immersed in the universe that Carbine Studios is making for everybody. And it was a really interesting conversation between everybody because everybody had kind of a slightly different take. Like, some people thought, like, gameplay was king over lore. Other people thought lore came first. There was a balance that other people were striking. It was a really well-rounded conversation. And if you're into video games and into the MMO space, Wildcast is definitely something to check out. And I will have the link in the show notes, but I'm pretty sure it's just mognation.com. And then you can find all the shows that are there. But that's it for me for what I'm listening to. Do you have a pick this week, sir?
I just have a quick pick there. It's a, sorry, what is that? Sorry. Second, I'm in a different tab and I'm, sorry, getting used to my new toy. Sorry about that.
Peyton's been drifting off during the show because there's a Unova tablet in front of him.
Anyway, it's just a quick little video and it reminds me of my youth. And this is a wheelbarrow with an internal combustion engine, Poland style.
What?
Yeah, that's what it's called. That's the name of the video.
Wow.
And it is very, very cute. It's it looks like they're taking an old motor off of a like a Vespa or something.
Okay.
And they strapped it to the front wheel of a wheelbarrow and put like two buggy wheels in the back. And there's this kid with a BMX motocross helmet on, bombing and running on this thing. Like, he is flying, right?
Oh my goodness.
And because, like, as a kid, I grew up in a rural area, and we used to do jumps in wheelbarrows.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, a teenager would hold a wheelbarrow, and then I was, like, probably about 6 or 8, and I'd climb inside, and we hit a pile of pallet, so we do this jump, and when you get the top of the wheelbarrow, top of the jump, he'd let go of the wheelbarrow, and your job was to keep it from tipping over.
Oh, my God.
And the wheelbarrow was lined with old concrete, because it was used for mixing concrete, so it had, like, big chunks of rock and stuff in it. We used to tear the shit out of you.
I would say.
But it was so much fun. Like, it was, you know.
God, this kid is flying.
Isn't he? And actually, it looks like a neat idea, but he is just booking it on his day.
Yeah,
like,
he's one pothole away from a broken leg.
Totally, totally. Yeah, so the internet, man, new interesting ways to kill yourself.
Yeah, nothing new there. Oh, man. Well, on the safer side, the pick that I have this week is actually a Kickstarter page. It is an NFC ring, and it's a very pro-looking video. Because it's made by a company here. They always bury the lead when it comes to this stuff like this. The video is by John McClear, and I don't remember the name of the company. But basically, it's a small ring. It looks like a wedding band, and it has two chips in it, both of which operate on NFC, which is near field communications. So you have to touch the ring to something like your smartphone or your home lock, like your front door lock, your car lock, whatever it is that you have hooked up to NFC, nice. And it allows you to then lock or unlock or turn on or turn off the device.
Things like safes, panic rooms.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Nice. Now, the reason there's two chips on the ring, one of them is for private information, the other is for public information. For example, you are at a conference and you want to give somebody your contact information, you just tap your ring on their phone, I'm assuming, the outside or whatever you deem public, and it will send them your contact information. It's like a business card. You know, you can save all of your banking information privately. So you're on vacation and somebody steals your phone or your credit cards or whatever, doesn't matter. You can still use your NFC ring to buy your next meal, get some replacement clothes, buy a new phone. Like, it's a really, really interesting concept. They've got 18 days to go. They are already 3 times funded. It's going to be
four
a really
now, actually.
What's that?
Four times funded.
Four times funded. Excuse me. Joel does math.
No. They've increased a lot. So anyway.
Yeah. So they've really done a good job on the video of explaining exactly what it's going to do. It is pretty affordable considering what it does. I mean, you know, 25 pounds, 44 pounds for it's a British company. 47 pounds. So, you know, you're talking about, you know, a ring that costs under $100 that does all this kind of stuff. The only caveat that I have with it is that, to my knowledge, no existing nor any future Apple product that I know of has got NFC. Like, iPhones don't, iPads don't. There was talk of a MacBook using finger, identification to unlock, but that's not NFC. I know it's all over Europe. That's how people pay with smartphones at checkouts and stuff. But I don't see, I've not even heard a rumor as to NFC coming in a next gen Apple phone. So that is a huge market to not be part of. So if they know something we don't, I don't know, but it looks pretty interesting. I found that via Kim Sherrell on Twitter. And she is a tech person, an early adopter, producer in Hollywood. And when I say early adopter, her Twitter handle is @Kim.
Nice.
So she's been on Twitter for a little bit. Yeah. But she's actually a really cool person to follow. But thanks, Kim. It's a really neat idea. I'm super happy to have wow. Have found the NFC ring. So that's it for me, and that brings us to the end of the show. As always, we record on Wednesday nights right here on joelduggan.com/live at 8 p.m. Eastern. You can find the show and the show notes on thecitadelcafe.com, and you can also find the email address and other, social media outlets via the show name. It's thecitadelcafe at Gmail, Twitter, Facebook, and Google+. The music for The Citadel Cafe is composed by Kevin MacLeod. And don't forget to check out the Gamers Inn on Friday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on amove.tv. Also, check out the Gamers Inn channel on Twitch. That's twitch.tv/thegamersinn. We've been doing a lot of fun video gaming and streaming. I've had a chance to play with Ryan and Jocelyn and several other friends from the community. Well, they record and plan to post stuff on Twitch, and we have an absolute blast. We played Dota 2 last night and had our asses handed to us by the computer. Like, it was shameful, but it was hilarious. So I'm not sure when that's going to go up, but when it does, I'll be sure to tweet it out, because it was a very, very fun time and definitely worth checking out. As I mentioned during my decaf, plug, you can find everything that you need to know about me at joelduggan.com, including my book, StarCrossed Volume 1. If you are going to be at Decaf and you're planning on picking up a book, why not pre-order one? That way you are guaranteed to have the character that you want pre-drawn and ready for pickup, as well as some of the things like buttons. I'm hoping to have some new prints, of course, I'll be doing sketches, like I mentioned. So that's it for me. Just signing out. Peyton, where can people find you online?
CardboardTreehouse.com, Peyton Francis on Twitter, and check around. I'm around. Cool. See you guys next week.
You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two, as I slowly choke on my own words. I was going to share a really cool video about Gears of War concept art, but as I was trying to figure out who to give credit to, like I was trying to figure out the name of the artist and stuff like that, I realized that the YouTube video was pirated. The guy made a DVD and was probably selling his process or teaching with the DVD at a school.
Okay.
And somebody uploaded it to YouTube in like 15-minute chunks, so I'm no longer going to be sharing. I'll share it with you if you want, but I don't want to promote it on the show.
No, that's fine. Well, you know what? You could probably promote the artist himself and say,
yeah,
track him down and get his DVD.
Yeah, I could. I just, at the moment, I don't know who it is, because, of course, he doesn't say it on the video, because chances are people that bought the DVD know who the guy is.
Pretty much, yeah.
You know, so I have to do a little bit more research before I'm ready to share it on the show. If I can trace it down, then I will certainly let you guys know. So how's the day been?
Good. I'm playing with this Unovo here today.
Oh, that's right. You have one of those. I'll have to make sure we talk about that in the show.
Yeah, I got my notes there. And I found a really interesting way of inking in Flash. Because a part of the problem is having when you do your two brush strokes and you cross over, how do you get rid of them?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right? So I put the grouping on. So every line stroke was a group.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then what I did is I went up to my eraser tool and I said select fills only for the eraser.
Right.
And then I went on go from V to E sort of thing, select, and I selected the line that was overlapping, and I went up and I hit to my eraser, it would only erase that particular group.
Right.
So then I can go in and I got all my edge perfectly pointy, and I was quite happy with the
way
it was.
Yeah, you can. So when you break everything apart, fast, it's all, yeah.
Then it all just drops in on one layer.
Yeah. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that you can change sense. The colors if you want, because it's all in groups, and you can adjust it accordingly from there, right?
Oh, right on.
But it was like really, I was like, oh, that works awesome.
Nice. That's a cool way. I haven't inked in Flash in such a long time.
Yeah.
I've just been using, I did an avatar the other day for someone that was kind enough to pull up a commission. His name was Dale. And I did it old school. For whatever reason, I was having a rough time on the Cintiq. My computer was being slow.
Okay.
I was just not, Photoshop was just not listening to me. My hand was not listening to my brain, And I said, screw it. Can't we all just get along? Yeah. I grabbed a 4x4 piece of Bristol and just whipped out, you know, a cartoon and pencil and thought, okay, fine, done. I'll walk away for 10 to 15 minutes and then come back and ink it. And it turned out fine. I had to fix some mistakes and stuff like that. Obviously, the things that you get used to in Photoshop are the undo button. And, you know, I like being able to experiment. It's one thing that it's made me a little bit more of a confident inker by inking on the Cintiq. But I also like the fact of taking a brush on the Cintiq that is just like super squishy, like you put any pressure at all and it just like just poops ink everywhere. Even brushes that have like a little bit of scatter or random to them that add kind of like happy accidents. I love being able to experiment with that stuff. And if it doesn't work out, you just erase it. You know, like happy accidents like that on a piece of Bristol are kind of hard for me to deal with. My personality does not mesh with happy accidents when I'm trying to do an original piece. So I'm
fine with the happy accidents.
Yeah,
Jocelyn. It's the unhappy ones I don't like.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Jocelyn teases me about it, but I do have a really hard time loosening up when I'm trying to do finished ink work, especially when people are looking for something in my style, like when they see Starcrossed and they want an avatar like Starcrossed. It's a very tight rendering. It's not Scotty Young. You know, like it's not just you know, pick up the brush and just go with it. Although I have to say,
I like Scotty when he does his inking. He always seems to put a double line over everything. Like he goes over it. He's got a bit of a gestural quality to it. The way he inks, anyway, it's very nice.
Yeah, his stuff always has that energy, and I'm gonna try to do some more stuff where I'm doing half an hour sketches. Like whatever it looks like after half an hour, that's it. I'm done, including the inks.
Yeah, that'll force you to work everything at the same level all the way through.
All the way through, yeah.